Ah. Abdunshakurun, am I not the grateful servant? So welcome to this last session of the inner life, and it looks like it's just you and me for now, so we shall see how we go on. So I wanted to start today with that sense of gratitude and feeling, you know, breathing with whatever we might feel grateful for in our lives. It's so easy to get bogged down by the difficulties and challenges of life, and every time we complain, it kind of the quality of our life goes down. So whenever we find something to be grateful for, the quality of our life goes up. It improves. So let's just for a moment connect with something that we feel grateful for in our life in this moment. Yahamid, Yashakur, let's take this into a practice of wazifa, or these qualities, using these two sides of gratitude. One is Yahamid and the other one is Yashakur. Yahamid is like this overall gratitude that we feel for just the beautiful qualities of the One manifesting in every being and in every place. It comes from the same word as Alhamdulillah. And it's like every atom in the world sings praise to the One and sings of their gratitude to the One. So surely we can find that gratitude as well. Or just anything that is around us, all the qualities go back to the One, this gratefulness, this gratitude, the source of all of that is the One, the Divine. And then Yashakur is the One, is the gratitude that we feel for the blessings that are particularly relevant in our lives, or something that we particularly feel grateful for. So it's a very kind of directed gratitude, you could say. So let's just do the practice a little bit. Starting with just breathing Breathing in, Ya Hamid. Breathing out, Ya Shakur. Breathing in, feeling grateful for just the beautiful qualities of the One manifesting all around us. And then breathing out, feeling gratitude very personally in our lives for whatever we might feel grateful for. Shakur, Ya Hamid, Ya Shakur, Ya Hamid, Ya Shakur, Ya Hamid, Ya Shakur, Ya Hamid. Ya Shakur, Ya Hamid, Ya Shakur, Ya Hamid, Ya Shakur, Ya Hamid, Ya Shakur, Ya Hamid. Ya Shakur, Ya Hamid, Ya Shakur, Ya Hamid, Ya Shakur. And again, breathing with these two for a moment longer. Ameen. Toward the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment, of the Master.
Of the Master,
the spirit of guidance.
Of good.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So if we cultivate that attitude of gratitude at the beginning of each day, then our days will surely be more abundant and beautiful. So I would like to do some reading now from chapter 10 of Inner Life. and it's called Five Different Kinds of Spiritual Souls. So it is bringing to conclusion all the, you know, that we have studied before in this Inner Life series. And it kind of lays out all the different ways that we can live our spiritual life or live the inner life, and just kind of like opens our mind, opens our heart to seeing that the spiritual, the secret of spiritual kind of inner being can be hidden in plain sight, and we just never even know when we meet somebody what their inner life is like. So I'm going to read now from Hazar Dinat Khan. Those who live their inner life have to adopt a certain outer form of living in the world amidst people of all kinds. There are five principal ways known which the spiritual souls adopt to meet life in the world, although there are many more ways. Very often, they are found in such forms of life that one could never imagine for one moment that this person was living the inner life. And it is for this reason that the wise of all ages have taught respect for every human being, whatsoever be the outward character of that person. And they have advised us to think who is behind that garb and what it is. So now, the first one. The first type of spiritual person, spiritual soul, is the religious character. Among the principal characteristics of the spiritual being, the first is this religious character. This is a person who lives the religious life, the life of an orthodox person, like everybody else, not showing any outward trace of a deeper knowledge or wider view, although they realize it within themselves. So it's a person who, you know, appears to be totally embedded in our everyday kind of religious life, and but at the same time they embody their teachings and they bring the practices to life kind of inwardly. So for them, any practice that they do is not just a mechanical routine, but it's a rich. It carries rich inner symbolism. Outwardly, this person goes to their religious temple or church the same as everybody else. They show no difference, no special characteristics outwardly show them to be a spiritually advanced person. But at the same time, while others are doing their religious actions outwardly, this person realizes them in their life and in reality. Every religious action to that person is a symbolical revelation, and prayer to them is a meditation. So the person might reach the goal, and it may seem a simple matter because all that is necessary is to internalize what they are reading, what they are studying, what they are praying, and what they are doing. And the scripture for them is just a reminder, the holy book referring them to that which they read in life and in nature. So I really like that he's bringing here the nature as well. So it's reading the sacred manuscript of nature and living according to that. Now, the second one, another aspect of a spiritual person, is to be found in the philosophical mind. So that's now number two. This person takes all things smoothly. They tolerate all things and endure all things. They take life easily with their understanding. They understand all things inwardly, and outwardly they act according to life's demands. They may be settling a business affair, and yet they may have realizations of God and truth at the same time. So this kind of person is, they might not show any sign outwardly that they are religious or spiritual. They can be just an ordinary business person doing, you know, like a merchant or salesperson or whoever, and you would not know that they have reached inner life, but inwardly they retain this total tranquility and inner centeredness and peace in whatever they do. This person may not at all appear meditative or contemplative, and yet every moment of their life may be devoted to contemplation. They may take their occupation in everyday life as a means of spiritual realization. No one outwardly may consider for one moment that this person is spiritually so evolved, except that those who come in contact with that person may in time be convinced that this is an honest person, that they are fair and just in their principles and life, and that they are sincere. That is all the religion this person needs. And in this way, their outward life becomes their religion, and their inner realization is their spirituality. So, and then Mushed Sam is here talking. Talking about telling a story about when he was in Alexandria. He arrived there as a tourist, and in those days all the kind of arrangements for accommodation and so on, they were done through the tourist offices. So he walked into this tourist office, and everybody was very busy there and answering phones and doing their paperwork and figuring out all these, all sorts of things. And then out of the back room came the manager of the tourist office, walked up to Murshid Sam and said, "Welcome, I have been waiting for you for 2 hours. And it was, you know, he was in the middle of this, he was running this busy tourist office. And yet he was, at the same time, he was a Sufi who was a realized being and a seer. And he knew that Murshid Sam would show up there. So, so that's how this second type of person shows up in life. You know, they can be everywhere. Murshid Sam is talking about several different stories, how he met an ordinary looking person who then was a highly realized spiritual person, or a sheikh of an order or something like that. Now the third form of a spiritual being is that of a server. One who does good to others. And in this form, there may be saints hidden. So this is, you could say, the salvation through silent work, or, oftentimes, in many spiritual circles and in the dance circles as well, we are using the words karma yoga. We are all, when we come together, we all put in some energy to support an event running or something like that. And karma yoga becomes karma yoga when we do whatever we do with that attitude of serving and really giving it, giving ourselves to that that service, seeing that as the highest thing that we can do, because through that then there is this joy and peace that that we can experience. So these people, they never speak about spirituality, nor much about the philosophy of life. Their philosophy and religion are in their action. There is love gushing from their heart every moment of their life, and they are occupied in doing good to others. In this form, the spiritual person may be a teacher, a preacher, or a philanthropist, but whatever form they may appear in, the chief thing in their life is the service of humankind, doing good to another, bringing happiness to someone in some form. And the joy that arises from this is high spiritual ecstasy, for every act of goodness and kindness has a particular joy which brings the air of heaven. And when all the time a person is occupied doing good to others, there is a constant joy arising, and that joy creates a heavenly atmosphere, creating within them that heaven which is their inner life. So you can probably, when we go through these five types of spiritual soul, you can probably kind of see that, okay, I'm aligning more with this kind, or I'm aligning more with that kind, and this one I might not resonate with, you know, like that. So it's quite kind of interesting to see all these different ways that the spiritual soul can manifest. And there is a story, Mother Krishna Bai in Ananda Ashram, Murshid Sam considered her one of the most God-realized beings on earth at the time, and was really, really highly regarding Mother Krishna Bai, and saying that she is the she's the embodiment of the Divine Mother on earth. So, and when Mother Krishna Bai first arrived in Ananda Ashram, then she asked Swami Baba Ramdas for spiritual practice. And Swami Baba Ramdas said to him that, look upon every being as a form of God and consider physical service to them as your direct worship. So that was the practice that Swami Ramdas gave Mother Krishna Bai. And Mother Krishna Bai really took it on, and from then on dedicated all her life basically to serving. And, you know, she was scrubbing the kitchen floors and doing the most simple works. And yet she reached such a high station in that service that there are also lots of stories how people have been transformed by her act of service and by her humility. Like there was one time, there was in early days of Ananda Ashram, there was a really kind of proud wandering sadhu or holy man arriving to Ananda Ashram. And he had a very strict kind of rituals of purity, that he wanted to uphold, and he needed all his food provisions given him raw, so that he could cook his own meals separate from anybody else, so that his food would not be contaminated by the ordinary people and so on. So, and this one day he was sitting to have his meal that he had prepared for himself, and then he had a bucket of water next to him. And then this this woman, one of the servants at the ashram, walked by, and she saw the bucket of water and did not realize that it was this sadhu's bucket of water, and she wanted to go and get this bucket to go and wash up the cutlery and things like that in the kitchen. But the moment she touched the bucket, this sadhu got really, really angry and was kind of like totally lost, and like was shouting and saying, you know, like, you have contaminated this, you know, like, you know, this water, and this is a horrible place, and I'm gonna leave this ashram and never gonna come back. And he took the food that he had prepared and threw it out of the window to the stray dogs outside. And then the woman, you know, the servant, she quickly ran to the kitchen to Mother Krishnabai and told her. And Mother Krishnabai was, you know, totally did not react to that. She was feeling the sorrow for that one of the manifestations of God is unhappy and has not now gotten food to eat. And she immediately took some watermelon and cut it very precisely into beautiful, neat pieces, and took like the tenderest, freshest coconuts and opened it up and cut it again, and plantains, and arranged all this fruit on a plate, and then took it to the sadhu and just did not say anything, just gave it to the sadhu like real, with real humility. And then the sadhu, when he received that, then he got that, he was sort of surprised that there was no repercussions for his angry outburst or nothing, and that he was just being served with total kind of egolessness, and it totally transformed his, you know, his anger went, and he ate the food, and then there was peace again restored in the ashram. So there are stories like that of Mother Krishnabai, and so I think, you know, there are many, many stories throughout history of other saints who have taken the service or you know, serving the humankind as their path in life. And so it's a beautiful path. So Hazrat Inayat Khan is saying again, this world is so full of thorns, so full of troubles, pains and sorrows. And this, in this same world, this serving person lives. But by the very fact of them trying to remove the thorns from the path of another, although they prick their own hands, they rise. And that gives them that inner joy in which is their spiritual realization. That's beautiful. So removing the thorns from another's path. Or sometimes it can be also seen, it's like absorbing the difficulties, the challenges of the others, like Mother Krishnabai, and just you know, because her own heart was so big and there was no ego attachment. She was just there to serve. So now, there is the fourth form of a spiritual person, which is the mystic form. And that form is difficult to understand because the mystic is both. Mysticism is not a thing which is learned. It is a temperament. There are those who are called old souls. They come into the body quite advanced, or maybe that they have already had enlightenment and are born to help the world. So, and because they operate beyond the boundaries of the time, space, and all the ordinary kind of human conditions, then oftentimes they are being considered as strange or weird, and they are not understood. Like, for example, Hazrat Inayat Khan himself, he was a mystic. And people around him, many people around him were thinking that they understand him. But whenever, whatever he was speaking about, they tried to understand it with their logical mind and take it into this ordinary consciousness, and therefore kind of taking whatever Hazrat Inayat Khan was teaching into rigid forms, which was exactly what Hazrat Inayat Khan was wanting to avoid and, you know, teach everyone to get rid of. So there was a, you know, it's not an easy path, because he also, and similarly to other masters as well, like the Buddha and any of the great masters, they might say apparently kind of like opposite things. You know, they might say yes and they mean no, or they might say this and they mean that, and that can be very confusing for ordinary mind to understand. and then people oftentimes judge these people, or they take it in a very narrow-minded way, because that's the only way they can understand and make sense of it. But then they miss the whole picture of the you know, the vastness of that realization that that these wise beings are bringing through. So Hazrat Inayat Khan says again, their every outward action has an inner significance. A person who does not understand this symbolical meaning may be bewildered by hearing a phrase which is nothing but confusion to them. A mystic may take one step outwardly, and inwardly they have taken 1,000. They may be in one city and may be working in another place at the same time. The Chinese say, go with the Tao. And the Buddhists refer to being in the stream. This is the removal of the egocentricity in consciousness. The mystic has no such egocentricity. A mystic is a phenomenon in themselves, and the confusion to those around them. They themselves cannot tell what they are doing, nor will they understand the real, you know, the others don't understand the real secret of the mystic. So it's the same thing what I was just talking about. The truth is that the soul of the mystic is a dancing soul. It has realized that inner law. It has fathomed that mystery for which souls long. And in the joy of that mystery, the whole life of the mystic becomes a mystery. And then it finishes, Hazrat Imad Khan finishes talking about that type of spiritual soul by saying, the best way to understand the mystic is to travel on their path or to increase one's full capacity for love. So that's the kind of little clue there for us. As we are trying to get away constantly from our mind and work with our heart, that's why all the practices, you know, bring us back to the heart and back to the heart, because heart can understand that which the mind cannot comprehend. Now, the last one, the fifth form in which a person lives, who lives the inner life, appears, is a strange form, a form which very few people can understand. They put on the mask of innocence outwardly to such an extent that those who do not understand may easily consider them unbalanced, peculiar, or strange. So, these are the people. These are the madzubs, the crazy people. You know, as they are known, crazy people, the ones who are mad or intoxicated or totally ecstatic, intoxicated with the love of God, of the divine. But we must not confuse them with, you know, like sometimes it's hard to know, like, oh well, is this person now mad, or is this person actually having a high realization? But the way that we can see and recognize that, you know, who the person really is the power with which they kind of work underneath all those masks. You know, they can appear innocent or crazy or weird or something like that, but there is a real power and presence to them. And that can be felt. In fact, I'm going to tell you a story about that in a minute. I'll read you a little bit more about this, and then I will tell you a story about this as well. So they do not mind about it. Okay, hold on. Let me just go back. Oh yeah, so people might consider them unbalanced, peculiar, or strange, but they don't mind it because this is only their shield. If they were to admit before humanity the power they have, thousands of people would go after them and they would not have one moment to live their own inner life. The enormous power that this person possesses governs inwardly lands and countries, controlling them and keeping them safe from disasters such as floods and plagues and also wars, keeping harmony in the country or in the place in which they live. And all this is done by their silence and by their constant realization of the inner life. Since there is a lack of comprehension of the higher types of mind by the generality, the bodhisattvas who live in the world and carry on the divine duties often have both to cover their personalities and operate from a transcendent state of consciousness. They understand others. Others do not understand them. In the language of the East, these kind of people are called madzub. And Mazub literally means possessed. Such a one is possessed by the Divine Spirit. And sometimes the word is applied in another sense to those who have advanced through many stages and states and become conscious of God alone. Okay, so I'm gonna tell you the story now. It's another Nasruddin story. So this one day, Nasruddin is going to the shop and he leaves his donkey outside to wait. But whilst he's in the shop, this kind of like eccentric, wandering prankster is coming along and paints his donkey from head to toe bright red. So Nasruddin comes out of the shop and he's like, what has happened here? Who has painted my donkey? I'm gonna kill the person. I'm gonna, whoever it was, this is not okay. Really, really upset, really angry. And then there's this little boy he sees on the street, and the boy says, he asks the boy, who painted the donkey? And the boy said, oh, there was this fierce looking, huge big man who just went into this tavern. He painted the donkey. So Nasruddin kind of like is all fired up and really, really angry. And he marches up to the tavern and, bangs open the door and walks inside and says, who the hell painted my donkey? And then he sees on the back of the tavern, there's this huge, big man with kind of crazy, piercing eyes and totally fearless look about him and this really strong presence standing up slowly and towering above him, above Nasruddin, and saying, I painted a donkey. What about it? So, to that, Nasruddin, all his anger kind of disappears because, this man is not afraid of anything. He just admits to it, he's kind of like, his survival skills are kind of coming in, and so he kind of like smiles and bows deeply and says, oh, thank you so much, sir. You've done a great job. I just come in to let you know that the first coat has dried. So it's kind of like this, in this instance, the Nasruddin is representing this ordinary mind of ours, and this crazy wandering dervish who this Mazub, he was representing the Mazub, this totally kind of fearless and not caring about the ordinary rules and regulations and doing something that disrupts this this ordinary kind of mind functioning. So when they do meet, then it's kind of like Nasruddin is forced, or the ordinary mind is forced to give up its ways and give up the ego and with total humility kind of accept that, okay, this is how it is right now. And in our lives, we sometimes meet these kinds of people who appear crazy and poke us or trigger us in ways that totally takes us beyond our, shift our understanding and take us beyond our limited beliefs, whatever these might be. There's also not so much a story, but just to illustrate this one again, in the 9th century Baghdad, there were two great masters, the two great Sufi masters. The first one was Imam Junaid of Baghdad, and he was the you could call them master of sobriety. So there are these two concepts again. One is this the concept of madzub, or the crazy intoxicated person, God intoxicated person, and the other side of it is the saluk, or someone who has integrated their divine realizations and who is standing with total sobriety. So Imam Junaid, he was the saluk. He represented that state of total sobriety. And then there was another master, and he was Bayazid Bastami. And Bayazid Bastami was representing the Madzub. And he was so intoxicated with the divine that he kind of at times totally lost any kind of understanding or any awareness of his own ego. And like, for example, he would look at his sleeve and say, "Oh, there's nothing under my cloak apart from God." And then Imam Junaid, he very much honored Bayazid Bastami. He said that, "Oh, Bayazid Bastami has as high a station among Sufis as the Archangel Gabriel has amongst angels." But at the same time, he also said that a person must first become completely intoxicated by the divine wine to annihilate the self. But they must not stay there. They must return to sobriety. True perfection is to be completely intoxicated inwardly, yet perfectly sober outwardly, fulfilling one's duties in the world so that you can serve others. And that I have, Nizamuddin Awliya was talking about the same thing, that there is this being in that state of madzub is one step, being totally intoxicated with the divine is one step towards the full realization of the divine. But then at some, but it's not the perfection itself in the way that this person cannot serve the humanity if they are so intoxicated. So for them to be able to serve the humanity, they need to go beyond that, and they can keep that inward intoxication with the divine, but outwardly be sober and able to function in order to be in order to be benefit to humankind. Does that make sense? Sort of. Yeah. So one is this, one of these is the Madzub, and the other one is the Saluk, who is the sober one, who has the realizations that the Madzub has. This intoxication that comes with its own realizations and own experiences, but then they take it and they use it, they put it to use for the for the benefit of all beings, basically. Something like that. Okay. And this is we are coming to the very end of this paper now. So the last thing that Hazratinath Khan says is this: there is no end to the variety and outward appearance of spiritual souls in life. But at the same time, there is no better way of living in this world, and yet living the inner life, than being oneself, outwardly and inwardly. Whatever be one's profession, work, or part in the outer life, to perform it sincerely and truthfully, to fulfill one's mission in the outer life thoroughly, at the same time keeping the inner realization that the outer life, whatever be one's occupation, should reflect the inner realization of truth. So there is no better way of living in this world than with absolute authenticity of who you are. That's beautiful. And I wanted to finish with a little poem from Rumi, from Masnavi, in fact. The rose has faded. When the rose has faded and the garden is withered, the song of the nightingale is no longer to be heard. The beloved is all in all. The lover only veils him. The beloved is all that lives, the lover a dead thing. When the lover feels no longer love's quickening, he becomes like a bird who has lost its wings. Alas, how can I retain my senses about me when the beloved shows not the light of his countenance? Love desires that this secret should be revealed, for if a mirror reflects not, of what use is it? Knowest thou why thy mirror reflects not? Because the rust has not been scoured from its face. If it were purified from all rust and defilement, it would reflect the shining of the sun of God. Let's just take a moment and just breathe with that. Thank you.